Hi, it's Paul Camilos. Welcome to Series 6 of Shooting the Breeze. Join me and my co-host Jacinta Govind alongside the STB crew as we cover women's hoops and women in hoops. We'll share conversations and get a little deeper with inspiring players, amazing coaches, and the legends from behind the scenes. Especially in this series, we'll be talking to dream chasers that give it their all and lead with their heart.
I do think what there is a correlation between is having high performance habits, right? And you can't be good in the classroom if you're not looking after yourself, right? If you're not sleeping, if you're not organized, if you don't have your priorities in line, you're not going to be good in the classroom. And so I think it's those human components that can lead to being good in both of those things.
Next up in Series 6 Playbacks, it's the STB College Hoop Dreams playlist. With US College Women's Hoops around the corner, we're featuring an assortment of short takes from Series 6 around college hoops. Lined up is James Jansen, assistant coach at Atlantic 10 Conference, Davidson College. Sam Tomlinson, former Aussie hooper, now college talent scout and facilitator with Aussie Basketball USA Pathways. And Lara Somfy, an exciting Aussie prospect that at just 17 earned an All-Star 5 nod as a gem. Lara is currently at IMG Academy in Florida with her eyes set on a US Div 1 college scholarship after she graduates high school. It's a real mix of perspectives in perhaps the most lucrative learning pathway for an education, life skills, and hoop dreams. Enjoy.
Yeah, it's a little tricky, and honestly, the biggest barrier is the NCAA's recruiting rules around recruiting calendar. So, unfortunately, there's a lot of events that are not practical or not allowed for us to attend. So, for example, under-20s national championships, we're in the middle of our season, not a real practical thing for us to bop on down and go watch that. So, most of that is probably this. There's probably not a more avid follower of Australian National Junior Championships on the women's skills side than me in terms of watching as many games. So that's kind of how I have to deal with the under-20s, with the under-18s. It typically falls outside of our recruiting windows. So that's one that we typically cannot attend. And so the 16s does fall within a window that we can attend. And so in the past, I have attended that several times. And that's obviously they're still young at that point, but typically the best 10 or so players at a 16 national championship tend to at least be 10 of the best 15 players or so, at least on the girls' side, when they get to under-18s or get to under-20s. There's not as much movement as there's probably on the boys' side with kind of talent differentiation at that age. So that's been helpful for me. Often players come on tours over here as well, so sometimes we see that. But I do rely, particularly early on in the recruiting process with players, a lot on recommendations of people that I trust, but kind of getting to work with them every day. And then the other barrier to our recruitment at Davidson is that we're an extremely highly academic institution. And so for every four players that maybe I like the way they play down there, I think they could play at our level, there may only be one or two of them that could be admissible into Davidson in the first place. And so we try to get that information pretty early on and in terms of what that's going to look like, whether Davidson's going to be a possibility for them. And yeah, that's typically how it kind of works for us.
It's interesting when you say that about the academics, because I suppose there's a perception that most colleges don't focus on the academics, right? Rightly or wrongly. So when you say Davidson has a focus on academics, for people who are listening who may not really understand what that means, can you just give us a bit of a rundown on what that is?
Yeah, so like we're a small private school that essentially is competing for students within the United States with schools like the Ivy League. So people are making the choice to come to Davidson and maybe schools like Harvard, Princeton, Columbia, Yale, Penn, those types of schools may be schools that they're also considering. Large proportion of our student body will want to become doctors and lawyers and and CEOs and do really big things in the world. And so often the way that I like to kind of equate it for an Australian conversion is pretty much everyone at Davidson probably had an ATAR score of probably 90+.
Wow.
And the majority, and that's including our student athletes. So very rare, there might be the occasional person that has less than that, but the majority, you're talking, yeah, in that 90+ range for an ATAR score. So that's usually probably the best conversion in terms of an Australian understanding kind of the high academic nature of this place.
And this is kind of for my curiosity as well. Are there particular subject areas that Davidson's known for?
A bit of everything. So we're what's called a liberal arts college. And so there is a little less focus on being really specific with disciplines. But you got a lot of, probably our most predominant majors would be, as I said, things like biology. Often those are people that want to go down what I'd call like the pre-professional health track, whether that's medical school or dentistry or physical therapy or nutrition, dietetics, nursing, that kind of route. That would be a lot of people would kind of do the sciences. A lot of people would do economics, which is kind of the business version of things, political science, so maybe kind of international affairs or law or those kind of things. And then psychology is probably the other most common one. And obviously people can go in a variety of different directions from that too. But those are probably our top four majors in terms of overall number. But yeah, have a bit of everything.
Okay.
When we were growing up in our junior state programs like ITC, which is now what? SPP?
NITP, yeah, I guess it's NPP, SPP, yeah.
Yeah, whatever it's called now, it's evolved. Same program, different acronym.
Yep.
But they always had a strong focus on being able to balance your basketball schedule with your school schedule and making sure that you're still staying on top of your schoolwork. And I remember, I think we had boomers or something at a camp say, yeah, you've got to stay in school and stay smart at school, because if you're smart at school, then you'll be smart on the basketball court. And so now me as an adult, and I'll, yeah, see, I can see your reaction, because me as an adult, I was like, I can't tell if that was just something a boomer told us to be a good representation and make sure we did the right thing and stay in school, or if that was actually true, being smart in the classroom makes you a smarter basketball player. What are you seeing over there in your long college coaching career? Are the smarter athletes in the classroom also the smarter ones on court?
So given how incredibly intelligent the majority of our team is, they do a lot of dumb stuff. Yeah, I'd like to think we usually, like, we'll use that as a bit of a comment to them sometimes. It's like, y'all are meant to be the smart ones, right? Yeah. What's like, if you're struggling with this, but yeah, I don't know if there's that much of a correlation between those things in terms of being basketball smart and book smart. But I do think what there is a correlation between is having high performance habits, right? And you can't be good in the classroom if you're not looking after yourself, right? If you're not sleeping, if you're not organized, if you don't have your priorities in line, you're not going to be good in the classroom. And so I think it's those human components that can lead to being good in both of those things. And there's obviously outliers, but very difficult to be an exceptional high-level basketball player without being a pro, right? Without having your ducks in a row and handling your business. And maybe there's other areas of your life that you're not handling business in, but you're prioritizing the fact that you're kind of doing things as you need to as a professional in a basketball sense. And so I think that's where you probably see that crossover, is maybe dealing with stress or handling things in a different kind of way. These people that are high aptitude may be better at doing something like that. But yeah, smart kids still do dumb stuff.
Put that part on a T-shirt.
Yeah. Yeah, and especially when they're 18 to 22-year-old too, right?
Yeah. To their defense, their brain is still developing, I think, up until 22, 25.
We'll roll with that.
We'll roll with that. So, yeah, my kids still do dumb stuff. But, yeah, that's funny. That's because I always wondered that, thinking, I don't know if that's entirely true. But, you know, the other thing that you mentioned is how when they're in that situation of juggling being a college athlete and having to perform well in the classroom, under those particular circumstances and I guess stresses is when you really learn, like properly learn or a more meaningful lesson in how to handle those things in life, like tolerating stress, like understanding that you need to look after your nutrition and your sleep and those things, which are the boring things of life and being an adult, but being able to develop those habits and how important they are for every aspect of life. Because we can all kind of imagine out of the context of someone being a college athlete or not having to go through any of those kind of different stresses or situations in life, you may not have that opportunity to learn those things. So it's harder when you become I'm supposed to be a proper adult. You're past age 22.
Yeah, totally. And I think it's reflective, and this is something that's used a lot in the athletic space within the collegiate environment, but you kind of look at most of the female leaders in America in terms of whether they're CEOs, but there's usually numbers floating around that probably 3 in every 4 female CEOs in America of kind of high-end companies are former student athletes, right? And that comes because, once again, there's a lot of things that you can learn from having to perform at that level and work in teams and prioritize your schedule and do those things, be a high achiever that crosses over with what life looks like after that. And the one thing I will say with some of those habits, the sleep, the nutrition, and those kind of things is it's something you do have to be intentional about, though. It's not something that just comes from the pressure, right? That you just figure it out, that, okay, that's what's going to happen. Like, it's something that organizations have to be pretty intentional about, or players, athletes have to be pretty intentional about taking a step back and actually evaluating how things work for them.
So while I was at Auburn and at Georgia Tech, I was introduced to the recruiting and scouting landscape, so to speak. I was recruiting Australians back then at Auburn, and I learnt the pathway. In 2007, I brought those ideas back to Melbourne, hence why I opened up and started my own business. I wanted to give all this information on to the next generation coming up. And here we are in 2024. I've been doing it since now 2007.
Wow.
So going on nearly 20 years now, I've built all these relationships with the USA coaches, and I can connect them to all the girls that are wanting to take this option to the USA colleges through this, like, social media, and just getting my name out there and my company to let the broader landscape know about what I do and how I can help the junior players coming through. I do travel around Australia, scouting and recruiting players from time to time at the Australian National Championships, so at the club level. Obviously, being a Melbourne girl, I'm able to see a lot of the club teams play on a Friday evening, so I can scout the players there. But generally speaking, I like to surround myself with the younger girls coming up and educate the parents and the kids on what's available to them after they graduate from high school.
And when you're liaising with some of the coaches and head coaches from the major colleges in the US, what type and level of information do they provide to you about what they're looking for? Does it go into as much detail as, like, you know, wingspan, skill set, things like that? Or what information do they provide you to help make your job easier?
Well, it kind of works the other way around. Each college at the end of the season are looking for someone different and different positions, and every college team is going to be slightly different, okay? So really what I need from the parents is highlights, and our parents are not really equipped in that area. So to speak, that's where USA kids, you know, their parents are always filming and they're so much ahead of the game when it comes to that. I have U12 players come to me saying, Sam, can you help me get to the college? Yes, I can connect you, etc. But we need footage of you playing in order for me to sell your game to these college coaches. So getting highlights of your game is really important, because how can we sell your game across the waters when we've got no highlights? Unfortunately, that's kind of how it's worked in the past. We've got tours, you know, opening up all over the place. I understand that. But I've always been able to do it because of my connections with the USA coaches. And I've been doing this since 2007. I'm able to pretty much land these girls a scholarship just on their performance.
So you're really just like an epic matchmaker, but in the basketball world.
Internationally.
International matchmaker. So they have those Netflix shows of Indian matchmaker, Jewish matchmaker. They got to start a new Netflix show, Basketball Matchmaker, about you, Sam.
And I love being around the junior girls. I did the pathway myself. I was a gem and a gold medalist at that back in 1993. I'm an advocate for the Australian junior national team. Of late, I went to the Under 19 World Cup in Thailand in 2019. That was with kids like Mila Goodchild and Agnes Napu. They were on that Australian junior national team. Mila going off to Duke through my services, and then also Agnes going to Stanford University. They were two examples of the girls I helped get over to the US.
Gosh, and your basketball pedigree aside, those two examples are very high caliber examples. Like, anyone signing to Duke ever, particularly an Australian, is like an achievement. So you helping someone sign to Duke and Stanford, and correct me if I'm wrong, but before Agnes, Alana Smith was the first Australian to be signed to Stanford, and I think the second and then I think it was Isaac White, and then I think it was Agnes, was the second Australian female to be committed to Stanford, I think.
Yeah, that was, I believe.
That's huge.
Yeah, they are pretty big schools. And those scholarships now are worth well over $500,000 to Duke University and universities like those prestige schools. Their women's basketball programs are always nearly ranked in the top 25. Now, obviously, you also need to be quite good academically and also have the best performances on the court. Because let's be honest, you're not going there. Yes, you end up with an amazing degree from those universities. What the parents forget about sometimes, you're actually going there on a basketball scholarship. Mm. So you're not going there because you're academic. And when you go there, you go in there for 4 years. At least you don't end up with a hex fee, and it's a free scholarship, so to speak. What an amazing experience. Now, with the NIL, that's just probably a whole nother conversation. And collectibles from the universities.
So just going back to the point about film for a minute, you were saying that most parents aren't taking film of their kids. How much harder does that make it for you by not having the film available?
Oh, it's very hard. If you come to me when your child's in 12th grade and you've got no film of them playing in year 11 and year 12, how can I market you to the next level overseas? You know, it just makes it extremely hard. These tours, the exposure tours that are popping up all over the place, again, it's another option. It's a great option. But, you know, these tours cost anywhere between $7,000 and $15,000. Parents don't always have this money to help the kids get over there and do that. Now, there's so many companies doing it, okay? So I'm saying roughly approximately between $7,000 and $15,000, okay? I have always been kind of against it because I've been able to put the kids over there without having to have the parents pay for these exposure tours, okay? Because it is so expensive. And with the cost of living, you know, it's very hard for me to come to you and ask you for $12,000 just so my kid can go over to the States to play approximately, you know, 5 to 8 games of basketball only. You know, it's a big ask. And the amount of money you have to pay for your child at the moment, from the ages of under 12 to under 18, I know in Melbourne, and you're driving on a Friday night all over the state, and you're paying registration for tournaments and registration for VJBL, the Victorian Basketball Rep Association. You're paying a lot of money already as it is. I'm trying to help the parents navigate the pathway without having to spend thousands and thousands of dollars for these tours. I believe it can be done on just highlight alone.
And you'd rather have, you know, hey, parent, just set up your iPhone on a tripod, film your kids' games. You'd rather spend the money on getting someone to professionally edit your footage to make a highlight reel than you are on some of those exposure tours, because I imagine as well the exposure tours sound like a great idea, but it's not a guaranteed scholarship, and it's also not a guaranteed exposure into the right kind of people and programs that you want to be exposed to as well.
Absolutely. And I know the levels in Division One, right? So in Division One women's basketball alone, there's a 365 schools. There's roughly, we don't have the Pac-12 anymore, so there's roughly, I believe, 31 conferences. And within Division One, you've got that high major, which are the Power Four conferences, like your Dukes, Kentucky, your Stanford, UCLA, your big schools. And then you've got the mid-major, then you've got the low major. I know about all those landscapes that are happening at the moment, and that have been happening for the last 20-odd years that I've been doing this, and the relationships with the coaches is really important. And obviously to understand the game, I'm kind of working as a liaison between the Australian players and the USA coaches.
IMG reached out to me, Montvert reached out to me, which is another really, really big program here. And DME reached out to me as well. And I just kind of had some conversations with them. I talked to my parents and, you know, we just kind of decided that IMG was where I wanted to go.
Wow. I didn't realize that even high schools could start approaching COE athletes in that way either. Montvert, I've heard before, because I think Ben Simmons even went there.
Yeah.
At least a year.
Yeah, but it was just kind of, the coach here just knew my coach back home, and he was like, oh, like I've seen your girl, like I want her to play for me. And, you know, it just kind of happened through there. But IMG, like, it's very rare to get a scholarship here. Most of the people pay to come here, and it's it's absolutely insane. I think it's like more than $150,000 Australian dollars to board here and come here.
So I'm curious to hear a bit more about the academy, because obviously it's one of those places that a lot of people have not heard of. And in a lot of cases, I don't think they necessarily understand the company that's behind the academy, which is IMG itself.
Yeah. Yeah, well, IMG's, it's basically a high school. Like, we play high schools here, but it's, you know, in America, like, it's one of, like, 3 or 4 of these programs. Like I mentioned before, it's, like, the IMG, DME, like, the prep schools, basically. And it's kind of, it's like the COE. So they basically, you know, they have 10 spots on their roster, maybe 3 international scholarships that they can give out for. And, you know, so they'll pick and choose who they want from, like, all around the world. So I have players on my team. Hopefully this year at the World Cup, I'll be playing 4 of my teammates, actually. I have one of my teammates playing for Italy, another one for Canada, Brazil, and America. So there'll be 5 of us from IMG, I hope, which will be really good. So, yeah, it's definitely really cool being on a team with so many international players. It's kind of like preparing you for college. It's basically you live on campus, you know, it's college. Like, you go to school here, you practice all morning, you go to school, and then you have training at night. You live at the CAF, like, you eat at the cafeteria, the same as college. So it's really good to prepare you for that.
I think you are right in saying live at the CAF first. I've spent a lot of time at the cafeteria if I was at IMG or in a college environment, because you guys would be burning, your metabolism would be firing. Plus, I mean, if there's free food, I mean, that's where I'd be.
Exactly. The food here is huge. We have like food trucks on campus, so every night it's a different food truck. Wow. And we have stores here, actually. So we have fast food chains at IMG. So, yeah, they just opened up in, like, our campus center. They have 3 or 4 fast food chains, like big chains in America, and they have a restaurant there. So, like, you can just go and get, like, a burger and fries and take it back to your dorm and eat it. It's so weird.
It's like you're living in your own town.
Yeah.
Like, let alone a school. It's like a little town or a little village that you got going on there. It sounds really cool.
It is. Yeah, we drive around in golf carts. The campus is so big. We go everywhere in golf carts. Walking is like, you can't walk. It's huge.
It sounds like it's not just a school, but it's pretty much a self-contained little community. Well, not so little community. Do you get an opportunity to mingle with people from other sports that are at the academy?
Yeah, one of the biggest shocks to me here is that, you know, when I went to a random normal high school, like in Adelaide, like I just, my local high school, that's where I went. So I was always like the basketball player and the athlete, and, you know, all my other friends, like the majority of them didn't play sport. And so, and even at, when I was at the COE, like we went to Lake G, so you'd be surrounded by just like, I don't know, like typical like students. And here, basically the school, every single person plays a sport. So the school is on campus and we wear our IMG uniform. And so every person here is an athlete. And that, when I was walking down the hallway a few days ago, I was like, oh my goodness, it's crazy. Because you walk into a class and they ask you like, hi, like, what's your name? What sport do you play? And that's so weird to me because, you know, back home, not everyone, like half the people in my class didn't play a sport. So it's crazy.
Do you find that you've got opportunities to go and watch other sports while you're there, or are you just so focused on basketball you don't get the opportunity to see any of the other sports?
I mean, my roommate and her friends are definitely better at it. They like make time and know the schedule and everything. I'm just usually in the gym, which I definitely is something I want to get better at for next year. But, you know, I have heaps of friends from tennis and golf, which is so weird. I never thought I'd be friends with tennis and golf players because I don't know anything about it. But, you know, when we're like, I do strength and conditioning with a lot of them, and a lot of them are in my class. And so kind of talking to them about just how it is like playing that sport, because I don't know anything about it. And, you know, especially with tennis, it didn't occur to me how challenging it is and how, you know, your body, like how hard it is on your body. And so just kind of learning from them. And what they're going through is definitely really interesting to me because it's like the world's not just basketball.
So tell me more about, so it sounds like your coach at COE, who kind of put this idea of going to IMG Academy forward, was supportive of you going. And
it wasn't my coach at the COE. It was my coach back home, yeah. So if you're playing you back home, yeah.
Oh, cool, cool, cool. Okay, well, at least you still had someone supportive guiding you there. But tell us more about what your day-to-day looks like at the moment with IMG, because it sounds like you said, it's very much like college, like you'll have practice in the morning and school all day. But in terms of your schooling at the moment, is it equivalent to like year 11 and 12?
Yeah, so I definitely was really curious if the American schooling would be different to Australian. I do think Australian school is a little bit more difficult, just kind of being here. I think that's just like a obvious thing that I've heard from people that go to college here and stuff like that. But we wake up, we have team practice. So we have team weights from 9 to 10, and then we have team training from 10 to 12. And then we go to school. We start school at 1:40. So we go to afternoon school. So different sports go to different schools. So like tennis, what other sports? Like, and I think it's lacrosse, volleyball, like those sports, and boys basketball, they go to morning school. So they start school in the first half of the day, and we start school in the second half of the day. So I go to school from 1:40 to 5:20. And then after I'm done with school, so basically it's open gym, but every single person in my team goes to gym. We get extra workouts in. So after school, we go to the gym. And then by the time that's over, I'm just so tired. I get food and I go to sleep. It's a long day. So yeah, but I've really liked getting my like extra practice in the morning before my team weights, just so I can, you know, get through all my workouts in the morning, get them all back to back, and then I'll have the rest of the day to do homework, study. I think that's definitely more productive on my part.
And how does that program compare to the program at COE?
Yeah, I think the program at COE is really similar. I do think both of them are really good for college. Like what I've heard, both of them are really good for college. But I think the COE program, because we did go to just like a normal school, it was definitely more difficult to, you know, like get ready in time for school, be on time for school, like focus when I'm in school. Because I think, you know, when you had training like 20 minutes ago and you're at school now, you're like, oh my God, where am I? Like it's, you know, I think here having the morning and afternoon school is definitely a lot better. And because our classes are different in America, there's no like doubles classes. So we would have an hour long class and like 2 days I would have a double. So I'd be like a 2 hour class. Here it's just an hour and a half. I think it's like an hour and 20 minutes every lesson that you have. So that's definitely a lot easier. So I'll have like two lessons one day and then three the next, and then just two and three. It's like A and B days. And yeah, I think it's definitely a lot better. Like from a tired perspective, I'm a lot less tired. But I do think the COE was great as well. I really liked our morning trainings. We would have training at 6:30, 7 a.m., you know, straight when you wake up. Obviously, it was really difficult, but I'm a morning person. I like training in the morning. I perform a lot better in the morning. And here, you know, I can sleep until 8, get there at 9, you know, train 10 to 12. Like, it's pretty good, pretty relaxed.
With all of this, what are you focusing on in terms of your basketball goals that, you know, this experience at IMG Academy you hope is going to help you achieve?
You know, my goal in basketball has always just been to inspire people. I know I don't know if you've heard that before, but growing up, I had my people that I looked up to, and I think I looked up to them like as they were people. And I think like having an inspiration, a person that you look up to as a person that you value, and you're like, I want to be like them one day. Like I want to be that for little girls. Like just be like, oh, like I love how she acts. Like I love how she represents herself. I want to play like her one day. Like that's always been my goal. And, you know, getting to the highest level I can, where, you know, I can do that for little girls has always been my goal. So obviously I want to play in the WNBA and in Europe. That's always been my dream. But as long as I'm inspiring girls, I'm happy.
Make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts so you get our latest pod. And we really appreciate if we could get a like and a review so we can extend the reach to more listeners. And don't forget, follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn.